Welcome to episode 226 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on April 16th, 2021. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Today, Ben and Scott walk through some of the latest Azure news, including the preview release of Stig VM deployments in the public cloud and GCC, 200 terabyte blobs in Azure Storage, Azure Storage Day, and a PowerShell module called Secret Management that you can use to store your secrets and synchronize with Azure Key Vault to secure your credentials. Look at you pushing the red button before me so you can record before me.
I do have that going for me.
I am recording now as well.
Okay, now what do we do?
I don't know. It's Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock. Feel like we're supposed to not be working.
Well, the podcast isn't supposed to be work. It's supposed to be fun for you.
It is fun for me, Scott. Every Friday, I look forward to chatting. Look forward to chatting with you. I look forward to chatting with you.
What do you want to chat about on this beautiful Friday?
I don't know. Should we chat about why we decided to start recording at 3 p.m.?
No.
Okay. Not yet. Not now. Not ever.
I got to make sure you don't break your record of saying you're going to talk about one thing next week and then not actually ever talking about it.
Well, I said we were going to talk about it this week. Now you're, you are. You're trying to ruin my reputation.
No, I'm not. You just didn't do any preparation. I went and did all this other preparation. I found things for us to talk about and, you know, here we are. You're trying to pull me off track.
I was teaching. That's just some lame excuse of why I didn't have anything ready to talk about this week.
You were teaching. I was working. We're all doing things.
It's been busy. I'm tired.
Yeah?
Nap time. Right? Maybe that's what I'm supposed to be doing at Friday at 3 p.m. is taking a nap.
Maybe. You know what you could be doing? You could be improving your security and compliance posture of your Azure VMs if you have any needs around DISA Stig compliance.
Or I can just not do anything and let the FBI do it for me.
You're going to let the FBI log into all your servers and Stig them for you, even though you're not part of the organization? Like, that's your plan?
Oh, they did it to a bunch of Exchange servers. Why not to my Azure servers?
No.
Wow, I just completely ruined your segue and hijacked and went off in a completely different tangent.
You did.
Anyways, back to Stig.
Yeah, let's talk about Stig. So Stigs are security technical implementation guides. They are typically implemented as a part of like DoD compliance when you're setting up machines. So the Defense Information Systems Agency, DISA, has these compliance standards around Stig where, you know, machines need to be configured in a certain way. They need to have maybe certain operating system features configured and enabled or not enabled. Like if you've ever been in an environment where you need to deploy SharePoint and it needs to be on like your web front ends need to be on like Stig servers, like you'll just bang your head against the wall all day because there's so much stuff turned off that it's horribly broken and for you to make it work is kind of a major pain. But one of the most painful parts with potentially going through Stig compliance is just getting like a good baseline, a good golden image that's ready to go and roll out so that once you've deployed your base image, it is like quote unquote Stig hardened and it meets at least maybe like bare compliance. And then you can go ahead and start your, you know, installing your software, making sure it's going to adhere to the guidelines, get you through any type of ATO authority to operate or things like that in front of you. So the cool thing here is in the Azure marketplace, there are now a couple of templates that are available to you that allow you to stand up new virtual machines and apply a Stig baseline to them for both Windows and Linux. Or you also have the ability to apply Stig to existing virtual machines. So maybe this helps you, like if you're going through the ATO process and trying to figure some of this out, like this is all available and ready to go today. You can also do things like take your Stig VM from the marketplace, go ahead and maybe customize it a little bit further to meet your needs, and then deploy it into a shared image gallery. So kind of having rapid reuse and baselineable virtual machines along the way. And then, of course, for STIG compliance, you kind of have to show that, you know, when things happened and when you configured them and how they occurred. So you'll also get like automatic configuration for all the logging and analysis that you need for auditing those virtual machines that you configure. So when you go back to do that kind of check and authorization process, you're all good and ready to go. So a couple of cool things here. The solution templates for STIG machines are available, like I said, for Windows and Linux. They are also available in multiple clouds. They are available in Azure Commercial and Azure Government. So it is available in the Government Community Cloud as well, with Azure Government Secret coming soon. So that is planned and kind of on the roadmap. And you have both OSs, Windows and Linux, across both commercial and gov, just kind of ready to go and sitting out there. If you are in the cloudy world and you are working on government solutions that require any type of implementation guideline stuff along the way, so like they do need to be STIG'd, this is an awesome way just to kind of get onboarded maybe a little bit quicker and get yourself up and running.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
So this is nifty. I was looking at it while you were talking. I was going out to the Azure portal. And because, like you said, it's available in commercial, you go create a new resource and then just search for STIG, and you can find this Azure STIG template for Windows. And I was looking at it, so I clicked over on the plans to see what it is. And this is, like you said, it's something you could also apply to existing virtual machines because it's just using a combination of PowerSTIG, which I went and looked this up, and there's a GitHub repo out there from Microsoft. And this is just a PowerShell module, and it contains a bunch of different components to automate those, the DISA security technical implementation guides using PowerShell, DSC, all of that within a VM. So it looks like what this template is doing is it's just creating a VM and then using those Azure custom script extensions, the PowerSTIG DSC, to apply a bunch of configuration changes to those VMs.
Yeah, so actually that's really good to call out, and it's a good point. So when you're when I say you're going to the marketplace to find this, you're finding this resource that is that STIG Windows VM. But in reality, what's happening is that's just the regular old like Windows image, or maybe it's like a RHEL image, Red Hat Enterprise coming down. That's coming out of the marketplace. It's an out-of-the-box image from the gallery. Like there's no special sauce or anything like that around it. It gets a set of custom script extensions applied to it. After the custom script extensions are applied, that would either be PowerSTIG with the DSC, so that's a DSC module actually, the DSC VM extension going there, or it would be the PowerSTIG MOF going through on a Linux VM. And then once all that automation has completed, your output is that quote-unquote STIG-hardened VM. So you don't have to worry about like, hey, is somebody keeping like a STIG image up to date? You're really just worrying about, is the STIG automation up to date, because it's consuming regular marketplace images.
Very cool. So remember when we talked about like the CMC compliance and NIST and all of that, and I talked about certain people going to GCC to be compliant? I don't remember if we were talking about it, and tell me if we did, or if somebody else sent me a message that it kind of goes along with the Stig and commercial that you can actually get a commercial environment CMMC and NIST compliant. It's not easy, and it takes a lot of work and a lot of configurations. But somebody, I believe, told me GCC is not necessarily a requirement for CUI data, at least.
I'm not overly familiar with it off the top of my head. I would say, in general, when you look across the board at certifications that are available in both Azure and Microsoft 365, and kind of all the backend data centers and all the things that go into them, you might find that you can meet, say, like a DoD IL4 over in the commercial cloud, and in the government commercial cloud. Government. So those same certifications are available in both places. So it might be up to you as the consumer to rationalize, like, where is the right place for me to go based on my workload? And maybe you have to work with the folks who are going to work with you on your ATO process, or kind of go through that auditing mechanism to figure out what the right place is. But I would certainly say, like, if you have the ability, as just like a broad, overly generalized statement that probably not many people should follow, if you have the ability to deploy your workload in commercial cloud and not in GCC, you know, there's certain operational advantages there. Like, you don't have to wait as long for software rollouts. You don't have to wait as long for maybe like preview features to come out and to GA and go through any additional certification processes or things like that. So I think it's a worthwhile exercise to go through and kind of rationalize and figure that out.
Yeah. And I would encourage people to do that, because I was surprised. Like, whoever I was talking to or wherever I saw it, or somebody sent me a message, and if you didn't, I completely forgot who you are. I'm sorry. But there's a lot you can get in commercial. It's maybe not as easy, and it takes a lot of due diligence, a lot of work to make sure you're meeting everything. But you don't always have to jump to GCC as quick as some people, I think they do for some of those.
It's not something you would like hop into. Like, I know that, you know, being on the public side of Azure, I occasionally run into customers who come to me and they say, like, hey, I would like to deploy a government workload. And then you start talking to them about, like, even the process to, like, as a partner, an ISV or an SI, whatever they happen to be, like the process of just getting them an Azure subscription in GCC, and then all the extra overhead and things they need to stand up, right? Like, do you need to stand up like a network gateway? Like, what types of traffic does it need to monitor? You know, what types of data can you push in and out of that? Like, it's a long and involved process. And if you don't know you need to be there, you might not actually need to,
Yeah. Interesting. So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription, so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud. So we have more Azure stuff. We're staying in Azure today.
Excellent.
And this one is near and dear to your heart, Scott.
Oh, yeah?
In Azure Storage. A generally available, you can now have blobs of up to 200 terabytes per blob.
Yeah.
That's a big blob.
That is a big blob. I had somebody reach out to me. I posted this announcement on LinkedIn, and somebody reached out to me afterwards, and they work for a backup vendor, and they said, 200 terabytes? Like, I don't see a lot of my customers. Like, I can't recall ever seeing one of my customers come to me and say, I have a 200 terabyte blob to back up. Well, like depending on what you're doing and the type of workload you're running, you can run into these types of situations. So probably not for like your logging and telemetry from your website, right? It's not your like Word documents and all the PDFs you post to your website. It's probably not even anything like media. Like maybe you run like a backend origin CDN out of blobs, and that's where you store all your TS files and MP4s and things like that and stream them out. But if you're doing genomics, you're doing like data processing, like the big data and big data, you're maybe doing seismic processing. There could be like maybe an autonomous driving workload. Like these things generate not only massive amounts of data, like all up across the workload, but also individual files that can be large in size as well. So what this enables is in the current and latest releases of our API. So we have kind of a REST API for blobs that drives everything. If you're leveraging the latest service version of that, like you said, you can go up to 200 tebibits or 200 terabits in a single file. Now, if you're going to that size, that file still needs to be comprised of blocks at that size. We've also increased our minimum block size along the way. So you can have up to 50,000 blocks in an individual blob or in a pen blob. Now, on put block requests or a pen blob request where you're pushing a new block in, those individual blocks can be up to 4 gigabits in size. So 4 gigabits and kind of ready to go. So if you did 4 gigabits times 50,000, that would get you to 200 terabytes and you'd be kind of up and running and ready to go. So realistically, like this gives you a ton of flexibility. It's a pretty big increase for us. So if you think about previous service versions, the current limit or the limit at the time, the previous limit, I guess, was 5 terabytes. So going from 5 to 200, like that's a pretty nice increase, right? That's like a 40x increase to get things to this level. So it gives you a ton of operational flexibility. Like, you know, if you do have a 100 terabyte file and you want it to be an individual file, you didn't want to like split it up or chunk it in some weird way, or like it couldn't be split like that. Now you have the capability to go ahead and bring those over. As this manifests and as it exists today, like I said, it's in our latest service versions. Tooling should rapidly catch up with this. So things like AZ Copy, Azure Portal, et cetera, will support that stuff in the very near future.
Got it. And it sounds like this was brought about by just increasing that block size. So I was reading the article about this, reading the announcement that it hit GA, and it's always been 50,000 blocks that you've had in a blob, but you just increased that max block size from 100 megabytes to 5 terabytes. Just a little increase there in those block sizes.
So that's exactly it. Yeah. Just like small, tiny incremental increase for you along the way.
Well, and not just to clarify too, it's not just like that Azure Blob storage, but now this also kind of ties directly, indirectly for people that may or may not be aware to the Azure Data Lake storage Gen 2 files as well, because really those are just stored in Azure Blob. So your Azure Data Lake Gen 2 files can now be 200 terabytes as well.
So that's a pretty cool thing. I don't think a lot of people have kind of keyed into the way that we view blob storage, but one of the things that we're pretty keen on is multi-protocol access. If you see where we've been going with a lot of the features that have been coming out, we have blobs. Now we have Azure Data Lake Storage Generation 2, ADLS Gen 2. ADLS Gen 2 is a service offering, like it's a proxy resource within a storage account, a V2 storage account, that also sits on top of blobs. So if you need to interact with blobs and things through like a hierarchical namespace in the same account, totally possible to do. You just have different endpoints. You pick the endpoint that's appropriate for your need, but same set of data underneath. And then, you know, we continue to extend that out and we've got things like NFS, and then we have other new protocols on the roadmap as well. Like we're always kind of looking to see what we can potentially grow into that, right? Because if you don't need Azure Files for NFS. If like Blobs is really the place you need to be, but you do need NFS, we don't want you to have to go all the way over to Azure Files and then have your data kind of segmented and segregated away from the rest of your blob. So I'll put some links to the show notes about how like multi-protocol access with ADLS Gen 2 works out there, so folks can take a look at that if they want to. The other thing that I'm excited about, like all these potential limit increases along the way. So today, you know, we've got general availability for 200 terabyte block blobs with the 4 gigabyte block size limit in preview as part of that same service version. So those two features, the all up file size and the all up block size, those are GA'd. But also within that same service version in preview, we have a maximum file size increase for individual blobs as well. So blobs that are not made up of multiple blocks or uploaded in multiple blocks, like they're maybe just like streamed in one big stream. And that is 5 gigabytes, which is really cool. So our current limit, like our GA limit today is 256 megabytes, and we're going to go to 5 gigabytes there once that's ready to roll. There's all sorts of like exciting kind of scale stuff happening on the back end.
Yes. Were you going to say happening?
Happening.
It's not Easter. Easter's long past, Scott.
Happening.
You just do like all these little increments. I mean, when you guys increase file sizes, you just don't go small. You just
keep going, right?
Like just like explode it out into massive sizes.
I think one of the things that happens over time is like folks come and maybe you read our scalability documentation and you go, it's great that you tell me what the defaults are and you say that I can, you know, increase the limit through a support request, but you don't tell me what the maximum limit is. I can certainly empathize with that. Like as a customer, like I might want to know like what the maximum throughput for egress or ingress on a storage account is, but we're not going to lock our ourselves into a place of saying like, here's our maximum limit today, because the reality is it's going to likely rapidly change and be much larger in the near future. Like we feel like that's a bigger chicken and egg game for customers to be playing. It doesn't help you to come to me and say like, hey, what's your max limit? And then put in a support request that automatically goes to that max limit. I'd rather understand like what your workload is, what your need is. Like, why do our defaults not meet the need for your workload? And what do we need to improve in the service from a scale and performance perspective to get you to where we need to be, right? Is there a blocker that I can remove that allows you to upload larger files? Is there a blocker that I can remove that makes it so you have to shard less data? Like, whatever that happens to be. We'd rather figure out those workloads and kind of build to grander solutions around those, if that makes sense.
Yes. No, that makes sense, which is interesting. Like when we were first talking about this limit and you mentioned some people may, like backup vendors, like, why would you need that? The fact that you guys are doing this is illustration that there's enough customers that this is a blocker for that you increase that limit, which is just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
That there's,
you know, the scale on the back end is super cool. I should see, I'll have to take a look and see if there's any like public numbers that we have ready to share. I imagine we'll have some stuff in our upcoming Azure Storage Day, which can be on April 29th. I should kind of plug this since I work for the storage team.
Yes, you should absolutely plug this.
So we have a free event coming up. It's called Azure Storage Day. It's not a full day. It's a three and a half hour event, but you can come in here from our leadership in storage and the PMs that own like the lead PMs on a number of features for us. So like, what's our current thinking around migrations? What are we building out? What's our current thinking on files, on disks, on blobs, on scalability, all these kinds of things. So it's a virtual event. It's April 29th. I believe it starts at like 9 a.m. or 9:30 a.m. Pacific. You go to aka.ms/Azure Storage Day. And I think that's it. I should really type that out really quick. Sweet. And just make sure Azure Storage Day.
And if it doesn't work, we'll put it in the show notes and go find the right link in the show notes.
You got it? Yep. So you go to aka.ms/Azure Storage Day, do the usual thing like, hey, you're signing up for a little mini conference and yeah, come and listen to like the latest and greatest with what we have going on. And if we get a good response to this event, I imagine that we'd have opportunities to do more of them in the future. Like I know we're prepping a bunch and we're releasing it already today. Like we released a bunch of new migration content for storage. out to Azure Docs earlier this week. We've got a pretty heavy migration session planned to kind of explain first party and third party, like maybe vendor options for helping you to migrate to Azure storage accounts. Okay. And getting your data to the cloud. And then we're going to follow that on with like a whole series of kind of blog posts and prescriptive guidance and things as it makes sense.
I'm going to have to tune in because I have some customers that would like some updates to Azure file shares and synchronization there. And I'm curious to see if there will be anything.
Yeah. So each team within storage has a dedicated event. You know, we've got files, blobs, disks, kind of everybody coming to the table there. Data lake as well.
Sweet. Very cool.
Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email.
So I've got another Azure one that I just sprung on you. I just sent this announcement to you in a text message, so you can go look at it. But we have a little time left, and this was one that, like, it's sort of Azure-y if you read far enough down, but it is a little bit more focused on PowerShell. So we all do demos, and we all use PowerShell, and I have done a lot of demos with PowerShell.
Some of us do demos in PowerShell.
Okay. Some of us do. I do demos in PowerShell. And there is a new module out there called Microsoft.PowerShell.SecretManagement and Microsoft.PowerShell.SecretStore. And you can use these modules to create these secret stores and default stores for storing credentials. So again, I do examples where maybe it's connecting to Office 365, to Azure, to whatever it might be. And you always have usernames, passwords. Sometimes I've used secrets and keys. But this now lets you store give it a name, give it a secret, passwords, all of that in these secret stores and credential stores. So that as you do these demos, you can just go grab credentials out of the store and leverage those when you're entering a remote PowerShell session or logging into something that requires those credentials. Now, where it kind of starts tying into Azure, and what is really cool is if you go install the Azure Key Vault extension, you can actually keep your passwords in sync between multiple machines, or I suppose possibly even multiple developers or multiple users, by registering this secret vault that contains these credentials with Azure Key Vault and then access those from all your different machines.
Very cool.
Yes. I have not played with this yet, but I think it was this week that I saw this one pop out. April 14, yesterday, 2 days ago.
That is very much this week.
Yes, that was. Hey, I can't keep track of my weeks.
Well, you know, it's tough.
Yes. This is something I'm going to have to try out so I can try storing credentials here. Although I don't know how this will work with Azure Automation. I'm going to have to go see if I can add this into Azure Automation and all of the different places I use PowerShell. If it'll work on my Mac in PowerShell. It seems like most modules they're writing now work in everything. So they're all built on .NET Core. But this one I am not 100% sure on. But store your passwords securely in Azure Key Vault.
Yeah. Azure Key Vault or also locally.
Or just locally. Yeah.
Multiple options there.
Right. I know people have done it locally. I've done it where you do an encrypted text file on your machine or something, but this makes it significantly easier.
Yes. Having a generic vault that can both be local or it can be a key vault is kind of cool.
Yes, absolutely. Anything else you want to talk about today, Scott?
No, I think that'll do it.
All right. This is shorter than we usually talk. I feel like we should talk longer, but you do have a meeting coming up, right?
My recording is 30 minutes, so I feel like I've met the minimum bar.
All right. You have met the minimum and you're free to go. And you have a meeting. Do you have a meeting in 3 minutes? Is that when you said you have your meeting?
I do.
Yeah. All right. I should let you go to your meeting. Who schedules a meeting at 4 o'clock on a Friday, Scott?
My boss. We'll see. If he listens to this, then he'll know how I spent part of my Friday afternoon and why I had to make him wait to go to a meeting.
Oh, shh. We won't talk about that.
Okay. All right. I will let you go, man. Yep.
Go enjoy your weekend, Scott. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.